Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of over 3,000 video sessions, as well as other resources, which provide practical training for every ministry area of your church. Right now, you can get started with an annual subscription for 50% off. Don't miss this great deal. Find out more and get started today at ministrygrid.com. Now, enjoy the podcast. You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Atkins, and I'm here today with Eric Geiger.
This is Eric. I'm here.
Wow.
I'm trying to speak as little as possible today because we have an amazing guest. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be fun, and it could also be a train wreck. It could be lots of different things based on past precedent. But last time, I think
we haven't had a train wreck. We've had home runs, like a series of home runs.
Okay, guess who that is right now? Guess who it is?
You can't. I don't have a my voice isn't like distinguishable. People aren't like, oh, that's, I don't know. Who's a famous Christian that has a famous voice?
Who is a famous?
Can you even name, like, if you heard Judas
Morgan
Smith
Freeman?
Line, yeah, we're claiming Morgan Freeman.
I just know he's got a distinguishable voice. Yeah. Probably not.
Maybe, I don't know.
That is John Acuff, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on.
Absolutely. Okay, so a couple of different things that you probably already have been influenced by his blogs or his books or perhaps his Instagram feed. But I do think that, you know, his most recent book is called Finish. And it's really about giving a gift to yourself of actually finishing something. So one of the things that in just thumbing through, the biggest thing for me personally is I have a book that I'm trying to do for a long time with Pipeline.
Todd has had a really hard time finishing.
You and 81% of Americans.
And it's because of what he said, which is it's not that you're lazy, it's that you're a perfectionist and you keep redoing things over, like, especially something you're passionate about. And so I that's honestly why we started the podcast. Most people that listen to the podcast know Barnabas kept trying to get me to write and I couldn't, like.
You can talk, though.
I can talk.
Yeah, it's fun. No, I mean, that's the problem is I always say, you know, perfectionists would rather get a zero than a C. So they're an all or nothing people. So like the person with the messiest car or office is usually a perfectionist because if they can't clean it at the toothbrush level, they won't even start. Huh. And so I'll meet people all the time that go, my goal is to run 5 miles a day, but I only have time for three, so I'm not going to do any. And you want to go, well, you know, three is like infinitely more than none.
It's definitely better.
It's all or like they'd rather get the flat zero than get the C minus. And so, yeah, perfectionism. But the weird thing about it is it's held up as like a good character trait. Like if somebody, you're at a job interview, they go, what's your greatest weakness? You're like, I almost care too much. You know, like I've heard that.
I work too hard.
I tend to be a workaholic. Like I give too much, you know. Like,
you try to make your weakness or strength.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I'm too giving. People take advantage of my generosity. So that's the challenge with perfectionism. And we have a culture that celebrates it and that we cheer for the guy who says, I'm going to, you know, do this crazy goal. The funny thing to me, like all the research, they'd studied this since like the 30s, and Derek Sievers and a bunch of people have talked about it. Like the way we're wired affects it. So if I tell you my goal the wrong way, I'm less likely to do it. So if I say, Eric, I'm going to run a marathon, you pre-congratulate me. You go, good for you. What discipline? I couldn't do that. And my body releases dopamine and I'm less likely to actually do the race.
So what should you say?
I've already received the high.
Yeah.
You should say, will you ask me once a week if I've run three times? Like, will you just shoot me a text and ask me? Like, that's the way to do it. So what happens with books, and I'm not saying your book, but a lot of times when you meet somebody, it's, I have a book in me. They like to say that so that you go, it's so brave to use your voice like that. Like, good for you. And you're like, thank you. I am a hero. And that's like, and then you take that problem and then you give the world the gift of social media. And so the problem with that issue is social media gives you the high of accomplishing something you haven't accomplished. Mm. So you go, I'm against this issue. And somebody goes, you used your voice. Thank you for being brave. It's like, I use 140 characters that cost me nothing.
Huh.
Like about an issue that I haven't, like, I wish that Twitter required you to volunteer 1 hour in your community before you talked about an issue you weren't doing a single thing about. Mm. And like that's, and part of the problem is we get that dopamine cycle.
Yeah.
We get the endorphins, we get the high, and then we don't actually do anything.
I listened to a podcast one time with Gladwell where he compared different artists that were finishers and ones that spent their whole lifetime perfecting. Did you listen to that one? It was in Revisionist History.
Yeah, it's a great podcast.
Yeah, it was, but essentially the same thing that there's some that create and they're willing to put stuff out there that aren't perfect. And then there's those that have to, they spend a lifetime,
yeah.
you know, writing Todd's book or working on a song, and that they can really limit their impact.
It's
because,
not going to be perfect is the problem.
Yeah.
Like, so every book I've ever written has a mistake in it. And I have like some of the best people in the world reading them and yeah. editing them. And so it's not for lack of effort. We tried, but it's just, that's going to happen. And you go, you know, that's okay. And you move on with it. So
then you do over.
Yeah, exactly. Do-over's mistake was I said that the sensei of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was Stick, and it's really Splinter. Stick is the sensei of Daredevil. Yeah.
Did you get called out? Did folks call you out?
Oh, yeah. Comic book nerd on the planet was like, I can't believe you. And then in another book I wrote, I said that Terrell Owens had he had caught 1,000 touchdown passes, and it's 100. So I was off by a factor of 10.
Ooh.
So every sports guy was like, wow. Hey, just, you know. So, like, you just go – but, like, the idea that I – like, what was an editor who'd probably never read Daredevil or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was going to go, hold on a second. I think he meant Splinter. He said Stick. Let me get my pencil out. Like, that's going to happen.
And dude. Evidently, an editor's not watching much football.
No, exactly. Yeah, because 1,000 touchdowns—that's a pretty
that's
good career.
A lot that's of pretty, touchdowns. That's
your first solid. Ballot, first ballot, definitely.
Oh, easy.
Oh, yeah.
That is funny, man. So, how much of the concept of being okay with not being perfect? What's the Christian worldview? How's a Christian worldview inform that?
I mean, gosh, we should be better than anybody mm-hmm. at admitting like failure and mistakes, and that we need somebody greater than us
yep.
to perfect us. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole grace issue. It's why, you know, the problem when you go Christians are judgmental or they're mean, you go, they should be the nicest because they've received the most grace. Like
yep.
the person who had the biggest debt forgiven should be the one out there yep. really forgiving debts that are small. So yeah, I think that's where it, and just the idea of admitting weakness. Like sometimes perfectionism is about pretending you don't have faults or admitting the safe ones. Like I don't like leaders that only talk about wins or successes mm-hmm. or failures from like 30 years ago that no longer hurt them.
Right.
And you can feel it. Like it's fake. It's not honest. And so I think the Christian kind of overlay to this is the ability to say, yeah, I'm messed up. Like
that's good.
I am. And the problem is like not everybody's safe. So like you have friends that you know you can share stuff with, and you have friends that you know like either they're too surface or they're too, they have like a point system. And so like, you know, the thing that you did is high on their point system and they're gonna, you know, and so you have to be kind of smart about it, unfortunately.
What's the balance though for a leader with vulnerability? Because we all say, hey, we want authenticity, we want vulnerability, but at the same time, you know, we just talked about this.
You talking about being over vulnerable with your failures?
Yeah. I don't want a leader to use it as a weapon. I think some people use it as an emotional manipulation where it's like, I'm using this vulnerability. Like they call, there's different ways to do it. I think that you should be fully vulnerable as a leader with a small group of people that can tell you the truth and say, hey, that's not right. That's not, like my dad used to say to me all the time, surround yourself with people whose livelihood isn't dependent on you because they can only tell you a percent of the truth.
Right.
And so I think you should have a handful of people. I think you should be honest with the church that you're leading, but I don't think you get up on a Sunday and go, hey, I want to review all the mistakes I made this week. Like that's not the point of it. Like I think there are some leaders that share thing. And part of it is it's kind of like first time counseling syndrome. Like the guy that goes to counseling for the first time is like the worst dude because he thinks every conversation has to be like, tell me the worst things you've been thinking. Right. Like share, like we got to cry for it to count. Like if we talk about football, it's not. And so I don't know. The idea of like 100% vulnerability with 100% of people, I disagree with. I think 100% honesty is different than 100%.
Right. I agree with that. Well, let's hit the questions. That was a bunch of good freebies, opening questions were awesome.
This is the second interview, and so we don't do a ton of second interviews.
Plus, I bought a Bible, so I feel like
you did. You actually, yeah.
I bought one today from this building. You have a store in the basement.
Full price.
I wanted to be like, hey, a little bit of
very generous.
If you got it online right now, you could get free shipping and you could get something.
But I live in this town. And so
we're glad he came to Todd. You're supposed to just thank him for coming
they
to our store.
They should list the weight of the Bible on the package because that goes into my decision.
Well, we're trying to work some biceps on the way to the car.
Yeah, the one I got was the lighter of the two. It was hardback. I looked at it and it was wrapped, so you couldn't look at the pages. So I was like,
so you got the hardback or the softback?
Softback.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've almost moved to hardback.
I'm going to travel with it though. I know. Yeah, people,
I'm still softback. I'm still softback on Bible.
Yeah. It's easier in a suitcase. Throw it in there. Good to go.
All right.
You and Jesus.
I'm just glad you're bringing your Bible when you travel, man.
All right. I'm trying. We'll see. My Bible app is pretty deep on my phone. That's probably bad. You can use
it. Got to scroll eight screens over.
Judge a person.
Oh,
the Bible didn't make the cut for the homepage.
Didn't make the homepage. Your Bible's not even on the homepage. What kind of believer are you?
Mine's just below my calendar.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
But not too bad.
They probably check that at the security down.
Twitter is in the up and to the right, though. That's probably bad.
Yeah.
Well, someone's got to be famous for being famous. Todd Atkins.
No.
But I do want to ask some of these questions. So as we're talking about failure and being comfortable with failure, tell us, John, what's a conflict or a failure that's benefited you? So you don't have to be vulnerable with all of the listeners, but we do want 100% honesty.
Yeah. Let me think about like a failure that's turned out.
Not from 30 years ago.
Not from 30 years ago. No, I would say that I really started writing because I felt like my faith and my walk was kind of all busted and things were messy. And so I started to share that. And that kind of my first blog was Prodigal John. And I shared that. And then that got me into the mode of writing online and sharing. And then I started to write Stuff Christians Like.
That's when I found you.
Yeah,
I was pastoring in Miami. And I used to go on that and just to laugh.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Well, so I would say that kind of started me, was that sense of like, wow, there's people out there like me that aren't perfect. And that like...
What were you doing at the time professionally?
I was writing advertising for Home Depot. No, I was writing advertising for Auto Trader down in Atlanta.
You lived in Atlanta at the time?
Yeah, lived in Atlanta. And so that kind of kicked me off that like... Because ultimately, Stuff Christians Like, my favorite emails that I still get every now and then are like, hey, I gave it to a friend of mine who's not a believer, and it let her know we're not all weird or we're
man,
not
that's,
all
that's,
serious.
That's awesome.
And so it was a kind of a secret like evangelism tool. And that was fun because, and I didn't set out that way. Yeah. It's just like, my life's a mess. Let me see if other people feel the same way. And then it kind of grew from there. So I would say that's the first one that comes to my mind.
Of that blog, Stuff Christians Like, what's the one that went most viral?
Jesus Juke.
Oh yeah.
And that was like just a random idea. It was because
I still hear people say that.
Yeah. Radio stations did like segments on it. And so that was one where like it was, and it still happens.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
I see them all the time where, especially around big events or like, I wish we cared as much about Jesus as, and then just insert a thing that we're into.
Have you ever Jesus juked somebody though?
Yeah.
Are you so?
No, there was one the other day that I like, it was just, we were making, where I get tempted is we're such a frivolous culture when it comes to celebrity that occasionally I want to be like, that's the most important thing. Like that Kim Kardashian got new shoes, you know, like that occasionally is where the ridiculousness of the media and kind of our infatuation with celebrity, that's where I get, even like in Christian culture, like when when cool pastors wear like those gold rim glasses that look like Unabomber.
You talking about the big, yeah. Oh,
like,
yes.
Like, it's like the Unabomber did a collection with Ray-Ban.
How did those come in?
I think my opinion, I don't know any of these guys, is that they get together once a year and they go, let's prank some people.
Let's see
if we can sell some mock turtlenecks in Kansas. And then they all decide to wear terrible things. And then we're like, I guess. Like,
it's working.
No, but like, that's insane to
Yeah, prove your influence. See if you can make this cool
again.
See
how, like, and so that's where I get into trouble with, like, Jesus juking is where I'll go, what's clearly a frivolous thing that somebody's just enjoying for pop culture, and I'll go, ooh, you know.
Did you trademark Jesus juke?
No, I didn't trademark. I mean, like, there wasn't money to be, like, it was just like.
Because I have heard it. That has lasted.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, we keep doing it, so.
As much as sayings come and go, Jesus jukes lasted.
For sure. I mean. You still hear it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was probably the biggest one.
So that brought you to writing. And then the Lord used that to
Do all this other stuff.
That's great, man.
All right. Let's move on to question two. So who or what has been your greatest leaders? What the greatest leadership influence of your life?
Is I'd say my dad. I mean, I'd say my dad. He's a pastor.
Do you mean your heavenly dad?
Oh,
Jesus juke.
Yeah.
Jesus juke.
I changed the slide today because I thought people were going to Jesus juke me. Because I'm doing a speech on momentum for this group of church leaders, and I want to be like, people are the key to momentum. But I knew some of you were like, well, actually, it's God is the key to momentum. Right. And I think so, but I would say my dad. He's a pastor. He's a speaker. He's a leader.
Where's he pastor?
I have pastors in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Nice.
But he also started a Southern Baptist church in Massachusetts in the 80s, which nobody was doing.
That's
so
brutal.
I have a slide in this talk I was working on that if you work at a church, you're an entrepreneur. And I believe that. And I don't mean – it means you have to make money. It means you have to be creative and flexible and have that kind of mind. And watching my dad plant that church was like starting, you know, this big endeavor that was like an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, really inspired me. I didn't know it at the time.
Were you a kid then?
Yeah, I was going in the first grade is when we moved out to Massachusetts. But then he did seminary at Gordon-Conwell.
Yeah.
And then,
I love that area.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Especially in the fall.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So we lived in Ipswich, which was awesome. But yeah, I would say my dad. I mean, my father-in-law has been great. He's been part of billion-dollar businesses, so he has great business insight, which is always helpful. I've got a bunch of friends that I've developed through the years that I'm able to have conversations with. A buddy of mine, Stephen Brewster, who was
I used to play ball with him twice a week.
So he gives me great feedback.
He better be listening.
I don't know. Surely.
Hustle.
I don't know. That's on you guys. Grow the reach.
No, he listens. He's been on.
He must have been on before I was on.
Yeah.
I love.
Yeah, he's sharp.
I love Brewster.
I think he talked about managing creative people.
Yeah. That's his thing.
Great episode.
That's his thing.
Cool.
All right, so what do you want your legacy to be? Your leadership legacy. So it's got to be deeper than Jesus juke. Although that's
I have a tough time with that word.
You would prefer to not use the word legacy?
Well, I just think it's weird. It's a weird word. I think there is some degree of that, but I think sometimes Christians get stuck on that.
Yeah,
and they act like Jesus did a ton of stuff about build your legacy. Mm-hmm. I feel like most of his stuff was the legacy is me. The legacy is God, live your life. Where I land on this, my buddy Reggie Joyner tells a story of somebody close to him that on their deathbed said, hey, remember me. And he wanted to say, dude, in an hour, people already start forgetting.
Wow.
Whenever somebody tells me that matters, I say, what did your great grandfather do for a job? Where did he live? What was his middle name? And we talk about how fast stuff disappears.
Yeah.
And so—
That's Ecclesiastes 1. There'll be no remembrance.
Yeah. And so I think I might just use a different word and say, what do you want your leadership impact to be?
Oh, let's do that one. Let's go to that one.
Yeah. So I guess for me, I think that people would try things they didn't think they could do. That's really fun when somebody I have a shelf of books in my house of books people wrote because they read Finish. And so that's awesome.
So they've sent you?
They've sent me the book and said, I had this book for 10 years. I couldn't finish it. I read Finish. I finished it. Here's the book.
That's really
cool.
And
so and I have manuscripts and I have emails about weight loss and whatever. So I think that I saw a cruise ship and their tagline was come back new. And I thought that's just the dumbest. I want my stuff to help people come back you. Who were you created to be?
Mm-hmm.
And let's figure that out. So I'm in this weird entrepreneur motivational space, but I don't do stuff you can be anything you want because I don't believe that. I believe you can be the best version of who you were created to be, but that's different. So I don't sell on the you could be anything. But I do communicate on the you've got something because you've got a creative father.
That's
let's
right.
figure that out. And I guess I'd like my impact to be I want to be the person in the talent story that use the talents wisely. And that's the challenge.
That's good. Mm.
You know, when I first came to Nashville, we had an apartment in Franklin that was just right there, just off the interstate. You were doing Five Club at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I probably
so came. Five Club. You got to give a little
5 a.m. It was
just 5 a.m. on Friday.
Yeah, and it was 2 hours, and But people would share real stuff.
Oh,
like, it was wild.
It was two hours at 5 a.m.
Yeah. And I'd talk and we'd do Q&A and like, but you'd say like, what are you working on? And dude, I remember, I don't know if you're at this one, this lady said, my goal is to drive across a bridge. Like she said, I'm terrified.
I remember that.
And like, it was, she was like 50. It was just like, she was this, like, she might have been 60, elderly African-American woman. Like,
so she's lived her life not driving across the bridge?
Yeah, she's like, she's terrified of it. So like, that's my goal is to work that up. But then another lady was like, I'm taking pole dance exercise lessons. I was like, all right. Like,
it
was crazy.
I'm not joking. I was at this one.
Yeah.
And it is it's an amalgamation. Like, you cannot, it's the most diverse group of people you'll ever see.
And so,
with diverse goals.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, I love... The thing that makes me excited is about situations like that is I get invited to places pastors can't go. Like the Comedy Central HR director can't bring in a pastor to speak, but I'm not a pastor. So like I can go. So like I really like the messiness of that. Like that's fun to me.
Yeah.
And it's hard because like I'll meet pastors all the time that are like, I've been a pastor for 25 years. Now I want to do leadership and go speak at companies. And I'm like, and sometimes it works.
Right.
But like, there's not 1,000 John Maxwells.
Right. And what do you think, practically speaking, stops, makes it hard for that pastor of 25 years to make that jump? Just because he's been isolated?
They've been isolated. I think unless they've grown something, it's hard for them to translate what they've done to a corporate experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I would argue people are people. But you have to do the work of figuring out that. It's not the client trying to hire you. It's not their job to go, I see the value. It's your job, and it's going to take longer than you want.
Yeah.
So like—
At that stage in life, you're—
And you're already like—
Oh, yeah.
People like to think it's a parallel transition. It's not. Like, you go back down.
Mm.
And so then you have to kind of like work your way back up. So that if you say like, I'm doing all these Christian events, and then you go, I want to do corporate. Well, you're starting with the, like, you're going to do, I don't know, the VFW for $100 on a Tuesday night, and you're going to talk to 10 war veterans. Like, it takes a while. You don't just get to jump to the same size.
Right.
I think that's the—
So you're speaking in a church of 1,200 people, 1,500 people. You're not showing up at Google and doing their—
No.
Their Tuesday leadership forum.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I think that's part of the challenge. Now— Yeah, so I think you can go back and forth. Like, it's not that. But the problem too is you have to kind of establish yourself on a shelf. Like, I'll write a Christian book at some point. Like, I'll do another one. I definitely know I'm gonna, but I can't right now because I haven't established myself on the business shelf.
Yeah.
Like, I've done four business books. That's great. Good. It's a good start. But I haven't owned that shelf enough. Like, Maxwell can go back and forth all day because, like, he's owned the leadership shelf.
Right, right.
I haven't. So that's kind of a limitation.
So when you're in those environments, clearly, even talking beforehand, Christian worldview, reads the scripture. No, I mean, it's flowing out of you even when you're talking. How does it come out of you in those environments?
It comes out in stuff where I'll talk about stuff that most people might not talk about. So I'll say, do over had these four things you're supposed to invest in. Relationship skills, hustle, and character. So I'll do that and I'll go, you need all four. If one's missing, it falls apart. And I'll say, if you have tons of hustle, tons of relationships, tons of skills, but your character takes a hit, you become Tiger Woods. And it falls apart. And I'll say, it's crazy that golf commentators like, so weird he hasn't won a Masters in 9 years. Like, if you do something in a row for 9 years, can I then act not surprised? Like, and I'll bring that up as a like, hey, and then I'll say, but do I believe in second chances and redemption? I do, but your character impacts your skills, impacts your job. Mm-hmm. So like, I'll go into character stuff.
Right.
And so then like, or I'll talk about marriage stuff or family stuff where I'll say, you know, say I talk to a group of mompreneurs that are all like building businesses.
Yeah.
I'll say, you know, I meet mompreneurs all the time who are like, I'm not hustling hard enough. I'm not building my business enough. I don't have a big enough dream. And I'll say, well, tell me about your family. And they'll say, I have two twin 4-month-olds and a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. And I'll go, what? Like, this isn't the season for the business. Like, you're raising humans. Like, it might be enough for now. Like, do some side hustle. Don't get me wrong. But give yourself the forgiveness to not be doing the same size business as the person you see on stage because they have teenage daughters. That's different.
Right.
And so like, I'll talk about, I would say it comes across where in a willingness for me to talk about heart stuff that catches you off guard. That's like Finish is it's research based. We worked with a PhD from the University of Memphis And so it's very research, but like there's a chapter about, you know, shame that I just did an interview with the New York Times the other day about shame and fear of success and what that means. And that like that catches you off guard because you expect it to be one thing and yeah. kind of goes the other direction.
So how do you stay fresh and keep learning new things? Because clearly you spit out new content and learning and growing. What are the disciplines in your life? How much time do you spend towards executing content you already have? How much towards I need to spend X amount of time in developing new things? What are the disciplines that allow you to develop?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on that right now. I'm curious. I'm in between books. So I've got two book ideas that I'm kind of batting around. For me, it's a lot of it comes with how much I value ideas. Like if you're a leader, you need to be an idea curator. Like I always tell leaders, you don't have writer's block, you have idea bankruptcy. Like you're not valuing ideas. Like, so there's surprise creativity and then there's on-demand creativity. And so I really try to be deliberate about on-demand creativity where I'm gathering ideas and I'm collecting ideas.
Where do you gather? Where do you go?
I mean, some of it will, I was just thinking about it, like I'll buy a magazine outside of my space. Like mm-hmm. I'll buy a magazine that has nothing to do with any, like awesome. Birds and blooms. And I'll read and go, wow, this vocabulary, the way they describe it, that's interesting. They care about that. I'll listen to a lot of podcasts that are different than how I think. I'll read other people's, you know, social media platforms that are different than how I think to get a sense of that. But a lot of it is listening. A mm-hmm. lot of it, I've started coaching for the first time and it's fascinating because it's kind of like the best version of being a stranger on a plane. Like the reason a stranger on a plane can give me advice is they're so far removed from your orbit that they can say, well, here's the thing. And so like when somebody tells me I'm having a hard time finishing my book and I go, well, what's the goal of the book? And they'll say,
Ty, this is for you right here, man.
No, but they'll say like, if they're honest and we eventually get there, they'll go, the goal of the book is I want to prove to my parents that I made the right career decision. I'll say, that's not the goal of the book. Mm-hmm. Like, no wonder you can't finish it. Like, just say like the goal of my business is so my dad loves me. Like, no, like you've put the wrong thing. But so then I have that idea and then I can later go to a company and go, just so you know, the goal you think you're doing isn't really the goal you should be working on, or the thing you're holding up isn't why you should be doing it. Like, and it's going to hurt you. I mean, and then I'll relate that to when I worked at Bose. Dr. Bose said we couldn't say bass because all our competitors said it. We had to say low frequency output, which not a single mom in Ohio buying a stereo is like, oh, I need more low frequency output. And so like,
is it low frequency output the thing yeah. that goes boom?
Yeah, I'll tie all those together. Like my approach to creativity and feeding yourself as a leader, Dorothy Parker, this writer said, creativity is a wild mind and a disciplined eye. So you have the wildness of your mind to go like gather, 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 gather. A thing my kid said, a menu, a sign I saw. And then you have the discipline of your eye to say, these are how these are linked. And I'm going to present this idea in a fresh, different way. Because the problem is your brain, the way your brain works is it's overwhelming. New ideas are overwhelming. So it's first, like one of its first jobs is part of your brain called Broca, which this guy Roy H. Williams talks about a lot. Your brain tries to bucket it to something it already yep. knows. So you go somewhere new and you immediately go, this restaurant's like that restaurant back home. I got it. And then it can right. move on and think about something else. So your job as a leader, at least when you're communicating an idea, you have to surprise Broca. Now, there's a difference between surprise and shock. Like I always say shock closes ears, like surprise opens them. Like I've seen pastors that'll say like an aggressive word yeah. or a
trying
sexual
to be crass.
Term,
yep, yep.
And they don't know that they've just lost the audience for like yeah. 7 minutes, if not the whole time.
Right.
And so there's a difference. And so that's kind of how I think about it. But all those things I just said weren't related. Yeah. They weren't in one source. It's just that I gathered.
You pull them from all over.
Yeah.
I want to go double click a bit on shock and surprise because that's really helpful from a communicator standpoint. So surprise, you're saying, grabs the attention of the audience, but shock, you're gonna lose the audience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So surprise for me, you know, I'll start a speech by saying like, because a lot of times you have to understand what the permission levels are in the room. Like, do they even know they have permission to laugh? Do they know they have permission to listen?
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting.
So how do you get that? How do you sense the permission level?
Well, I usually try to see what happened right before that.
Okay.
So if I was a pastor, I would understand that's where the worship is part of your sermon. Like right. you don't want it to be opposite.
Yeah.
But if I go to an event, like, so I spoke at Catalyst last week, Catalyst West Coast, and the first speaker was Andy Stanley, and then it was Bob Goff, and then me, which is like the worst, like it's suicide. And I knew everyone was thinking it. The other thing you do is, and I'm a speaking geek, like I'm thinking about doing like a whole course around it because I nerd out on it. But I think as a leader, you have to try to understand with empathy, what are people thinking about right now? And if I don't address it, they're going to be stuck. So like if I don't say the thing they're all thinking, like one of my favorite things to do is share an idea and then share the reason you don't believe it. So I do this whole talk about the research we did about fun. And I know everyone's going, yeah, but my job's not always fun. And so then my next slide will say, let's be honest, kale isn't fun. And I'll do a joke about kale, but then I'll say, we've done a disservice to the next generation by going, follow your dream, follow your passion. And the minute it's not that, they give up. And so it's not about having fun, it's about making it fun. And those are two different things. So at Catalyst, I come out, and Bob had just been like, he got a standing ovation, like, of course.
And that's right before you?
Yeah, right before me. And so he's got a new book coming out, and he's like, oh, we're building schools in these places. Like, we're putting a school in Afghanistan. Like, and so I come out, and my opening line, which was just because of that, I said, Catalyst asked who I wanted to follow, and I said, Bob, preferably Andy Stanley, and then freaking Bob Goff, and then, you know, because he's easy to follow. We're opening schools on Mars for Martian orphans that are pirate orphans with peg legs. Like, and I did this whole bit, and it, you can, the audience is dying laughing, but they're also relieved because they're thinking like,
how does he follow?
That was intense.
Yeah. And so that's how, that was a surprise. The surprise is I was willing to do it. And play it like,
right.
And then but the reality is I knew I was going to do it. Like it felt spontaneous, but I knew in the green room, I said to my friend, like, I'm totally going to, I got to call this out.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, probably. So like that surprise where shock is like, and the problem is our culture works on shock to some degree, pop culture does, where you have to keep kind of, it's so funny, like years ago, I said Lady Gaga is going to have to go all the way back and start again because she's already reached a limit. Like, you're wearing a meat dress, like you've come to the end of the shock trip. Yeah. So what did she do?
Ain't much further you can do.
What did she do? She does the Tony Bennett Project, which is a complete return to like, it's stripped down, it's just music. And so when a pastor, the hard part about being a pastor is it's the same people every week. My job's way easier than being a pastor. Like, it just is. And I credit pastors. But so if you get stuck on shock and you get a little buzz on that, like you kind of get addicted to it. And then you're like,
you keep pushing it.
And then like, then it eventually it just blows up.
Right. And we've seen that.
Yeah.
We've seen the.
Yes.
It's not uncommon.
No.
How do you keep it fresh though?
So,
well, I think you keep it fresh, part of it by keeping it personal. I think you keep it fresh with people. Like, I always want you to be like, I think a great sermon's built Monday through Saturday interacting with people and understanding this is what they really need. Like, I always, the start of a sermon isn't what do I want to preach about? It's what do people need to hear? And if I'm not interacting with people, I don't know. Like, I just don't have a sense of that. So your ability to keep it fresh is depending on if you have fresh relationships. Like, if you're stagnant in your relationships, your sermon has no other option.
It'll reflect that.
Yeah, it'll reflect that.
Good deal. Okay, so I'm going to move to question four because we peppered you with like.
No, I hit four.
Yeah, we hit four.
Oh, that's
right. Where were you, Todd? You were working on your book.
He was working on his book.
Yeah. I'm giving a gift to myself.
There you
finishing.
Go.
Finish it.
All right. What is the best piece of leadership advice you've ever been given?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I got great leadership advice from Dan Caffey, the CEO of Chick-fil-A. I used to work with him kind of on a one-on-one basis. And it wasn't, it's funny. There's two types of advice. There's the type where they say it to you and there's the type where they live it. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely does both. But like I always remember, and this has been probably 10 years ago. We're at the Georgia Dome. It's the day before the Chick-fil-A Bowl, biggest event they do all year. They work all year for it. There's probably 150 employees running around like crazy. I'm hanging out with Dan. He gets a phone call. He's like, hey, sorry, I gotta take this. Comes back. He's like, sorry, that was a sophomore from the Sunday school class I teach. He wanted to see if he could get some tickets. And the things I took from that are one, he teaches Sunday school.
Yeah.
Like he's a billionaire. He's worth $6 billion. Like I know thousandaires that are too busy for people.
That's right.
You know, like two, the kid had his real phone number, like not the Google voice you give people who look stabby. Number three, Dan had told the kid he was important because if you don't feel important, you don't bother people. Like, if I don't feel valuable, I don't call you. And so the kid, and I love the kid's chutzpah, by the way, of like the before being like, hold on, let me call Danny C, get some tickets, you know. You didn't invent the chicken, just the chicken sandwich. Invent me some tickets. Like, so the kid, but the kid was in relationship. And so I took that. I think it's really hard. You know, I'm kind of the Ali Andrews school of like the human soul wasn't designed for fame. And so I think success is really hard to navigate. And so whenever... The flip side of that, where the enemy goes, like, all success is bad, you shouldn't have success, it'll ruin you. I remember Dan Cathy, who's a humble, generous, kind billionaire. When we'd go to events, people that didn't know him would go, what are you doing? You go, oh, I'm in customer service. And he meant it. He wasn't saying it, so hoping later they found out, look, you're amazing. Like, when we would go to Chick-fil-A's, he would clean the trash. Like, that was the first thing he did. And it wasn't a show. It wasn't. And so, like, I asked him once, where do you find such amazing teenagers to work there? Because, like, when you go to another fast food place, you're like, they hate me. They're so mad I'm here. Like, it's terrible. And he said, well, the first thing we do is reparent them. And he said, a lot of them need to be reparented. There's not a CEO of any fast food company that's like, we really try to reparent the kids. Like, they don't think about it that way. They're like, hire cheaper kids to do cheaper labor. Like, so I would say, I mean, in addition to all that stuff my dad passed on, I think that I really benefited from a lot of what Dan Cathy talked about or let me see up close. Because I don't know if he ever said, John, do this.
Yeah, that's gold. Right.
But I definitely got to see how he interacted.
Man, that is excellent.
Yeah, he'd be great. He'd love it. I mean, he's great at these kind of things.
So I want to be sure that folks know to get Finish.
Sure.
And so
they're not getting it here. I looked.
It's not here.
I don't think so. Is it? I don't think it's in the store downstairs. You guys are powerful. We're on the executive wing. I saw the sign out in the door. Executives. Baller status.
But you.
He's over Lifeway Stores.
You're over Lifeway Stores? Come on, dude. I'm buying Bibles.
Thank you.
Do you have a single? You might have stuff Christians like.
I would know every single title in our stores?
Did you interview every single person that puts a book in that store? No, me. One person.
I should have checked ahead of time.
I know you used to have it, and I don't know if it was at Lifeway. It could have been at some other store, but people at the register used to tell people it's not edifying. Like, you don't want to buy the book. Stuff Christians like, which I like to think made them be like, I'm buying two.
buying three. It's contrary.
It goes viral that way.
Yeah.
But Finish... Give us a blurb for it, man. We've been threading it through the whole discussion, but
if you have something that you want to finish, what, you know, whether it's a diet or a book or a business, or, you know, you want to be more deliberate about loving your wife, or you have somebody who you see something in that they don't see it. Like, it's been really fun to see spouses buy it for spouses, because it's not
to give to the spouse.
It's positive. Like,
yeah.
It's not a negative thing. Like, there's not a man on the planet that likes when his wife is like, hey, I bought this book about being a better husband.
Oh, that's the worst. You know,
better dad. You're like, oh. And so if you have something you want to finish, I think it's...
Yeah.
And it's... my whole thing is, like, starting is fun, but the future belongs to finishers. 92% of goals fail, statistically.
Wow.
So if you want to be part of the 8%, like, it's really fun.
That's good.
I do want to say one thing, because I noticed something in looking up some things before the podcast. I didn't realize that you had a podcast.
Yeah, I've only done like 5 or 6 episodes. It's called Creative Slide. Right? I like it. It's fun. It's interviews and then me like riffing on ideas. So like one will be like, hey, here's how I deal with like if I'm stressed out, here's anxiety, and that's where you try to share an appropriate amount.
This is what level. I do when I realize my book's not carried and I'm in front of a guy on the podcast.
I'm in front of some power players I just make it happen.
I just called out
I make a move
on the episode.
Well, I'm here. Like, yeah, exactly. I'm like Danny C. Let's do it. Yeah, so I like doing it. It's
how
fun.
Do you spell chutzpah?
I think it's C-H.
Okay, see, then I think I've been pronouncing
it. C-H-U-T-Z-P-A-H.
I write that word well. I have been saying
it. No, it's chutzpah.
I've been saying it incorrectly.
What have you been saying, chutzpah?
I think I've been saying the C in the word.
No. What a evangelical.
Why
do you hate the Jewish people?
Jukes juked me, man.
No, that was old school. That was like a Torah juke. That was great.
I think we need to end there.
Man, you've been listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Hope it's been fun and helpful.
And edifying.
Yeah, it was.
It was good.
Finish. Acuff.me. John Acuff on Twitter.
Check them out. Check out the book. And also, while you're at it, go leave us a big ol' like on iTunes. Thanks.
Or rating and review.
That too.
Don't
rating
you say
and
please
review.
Subscribe?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And please subscribe. That too.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church year-round for 50% off, visit ministrygrid.com. Once again, that's ministrygrid.com.